Good morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And we're really fortunate. We've got a great topic today. And our guest is Mark Cote. He is a president and publisher of Cormorant Books. And he has written an article. By the way, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you for being in the studio. The title of you wrote this for
Quill and Quire.
Yes, that's Quill and Quire. I started to say Quill.
Quill, yeah, Quill.
Yes,
and
Quill
Quire.
And Quire. Quill is another outfit.
Yes.
The case for a federal publishing tax credit, or a modest proposal for a federal publishing tax credit. That's not exactly a stirring title.
No.
But the subject is, because you dive right into our really Canada's favorite problem, identity matters, and you are talking about Strong Canada. Something, by the way, we talk about on the show. Actually, the last couple of weeks we've been talking about mentioning a folk group, the Travelers, of which my wife is a member, and they had a song that said, "This land is your land."
Yes.
And they found as they crossed the country that, boy, people liked that song.
Yes, they did. We all did.
And you're in this position to say, really, Canadians have that desire for definitive statement about who we are and who we're not. But there's you're arguing, I'll ask you to outline it, the issue of power, and people understand power, at least our new government, as more soldiers or more missiles or submarines. But the cultural aspect is neglected. The idea of who are we? Do we like each other? Would we unite? And I think you've outlined many times in the things you write that it's very problematic, and we need a strong cultural effort.
Absolutely.
In every department.
Absolutely.
So I'll let you talk about it.
Okay.
What is this? Where do books and authors and readers fit into this thing of power?
Well, for years and years and years, it's been understood that culture is soft power. And it actually works best because when the Winnipeg Ballet went to Russia to play at the Bolshoi, that was a way of breaking down barriers. And it was successful. And beginning in, I guess it was in the 60s with Pierre Elliott Trudeau, and the idea was we would do more trade with countries that we did not necessarily get along with, China mm-hmm. being premier. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we thought, we can sell them our wheat, and we will make a lot of money. And, of course, over the years, it's turned out that that balance has shifted. They now buy less from us, and we buy a lot more from them. And Mark Carney has come along with the idea that he's going to increase trade. He is going to increase military spending. He is going to increase spending anywhere except culture. And it's a very interesting decision to make because, well, at this point, it's 11 years ago, the then new Trudeau government said they were going to double the money for, in specific, the Canada Book Fund.
That was 2016.
And that was 2015. It was
2015,
the
I'm sorry.
Date. Like,
he was pre-Trump, I forgot.
And they were adamant they were going to do this, and they never did. They were going to fix copyright, and they never did.
When you say never, I mean, did they just say it and then nothing happened? You knocked on the door and there was nobody there?
We knocked on the door and they said, hello. goodbye. And over the years, they added little bits of money to the Canada Book Fund, but never increasing the dollar value that it should have been. And lest anyone listening thinks, oh, I'm simply here to say, please give us more money, sir, like, you know, Oliver asking for more at breakfast. The reality is, in Canada, our industry is a fledgling industry, but it is not a fledgling market. We have a very solid, good book market, and we have an education system that buys books. The problem is, the books we buy for our students are largely foreign authored and largely foreign published. The books in our bookstores are 95% foreign published and 80% foreign authored. That we are the only country in the world that has stats like that. Or, I should say, the only developed country in the world that has stats like that. And people know each other, they know their country, not necessarily by a specific definitive set of books, but certainly by a large number of books we get to know each other. And one of the examples that I like to use is when, I guess it was 1977, I was 17 years old, I was living in North Vancouver, and the Vancouver East Cultural Center put on a play, Hosanna, by Michel Tremblay. So I went to see it, and it was a revelation. I was 17 years old. Oh, my God, here's a drag queen dressed up like Elizabeth Taylor playing Cleopatra. And it was a stunning play. And what I realized many years later was the play, of course, was written en français by Michel Tremblay, and it was first produced in Montreal at Théâtre du Nouveau Monde. Then it was translated into English, performed at the Tarragon in Toronto, and then that translation by Bill Glasgow and John Van Buren was polished and published by Talon Books in Vancouver. And then that copies of that book made it into colleges and universities across the country where it was studied in theater programs. And for me, that's symbolic of the way our culture should work. And we kind of get it right sometimes, and then we fall away. So the funding that makes these things happen is somewhat there through the Canada Council, but the industrial component, the part that says edit the books, produce the books, design the books, get them out, print them and get them out there, that funding lacks. And it lacks because there is no political will at the moment, and there hasn't been for 11 years.
Yeah, so that's really remarkable. By the way, I have to say, I love that Michel, I'm sorry.
Michel Tremblay?
Tremblay. The other thing, he was a revelation in Quebec. Because I was looking into it, and he was writing Joual, if
right.
I said it right, Joual.
And
it had to be translated into French. when it was performed in France, according to the accounts, the French said, "What is this?" And then they realized, "We like this. This is great." But then they tinkered with
the language,
make it to available to a wider audience, and they had this curious thing of making it into some kind of, I wouldn't know what it is, maybe off French or something, but they had problems. It was great for waking everybody up.
Well, Tremblay is one of the few living Canadians who I think is worthy of a Nobel Prize, hands
Absolutely.
Down. He took an entire culture and built a literature on it, and there are very few people who've been able to do that to the degree that he has done and to the success that he has done. And one of his plays, I think even in the translation they call it Les Belles Sœurs, the sisters-in-law. And it's about a group of Quebecois women, Montrealers, and it's their lives are on the table. And it's this roundtable discussion. And when it was performed in Scotland, they translated it into Scottish English and called
Perfect.
It the Good Sisters.
Yeah. There is that across our, you're very aware of it. I looked in your writings, and you're quite aware of the Bretons and the Welsh Scot. There are cultures among us.
Absolutely.
That are not celebrated or brought to the surface properly.
Every now and then they are, and then there's sort of a moment when we pay attention as a culture, and then it slides away. Michel Tremblay probably had his peak through the mid-1970s into the 1980s, and now it's sort of quieted down, although I think there should be a roar for the people in Sweden to pay attention. Yeah. But it's part of the problem that we don't, as a country, really teach our own literature. We don't teach our own writers. And it's not that I want everybody to read the one Canadian book, because I want them to read 40 different Canadian books. Mm-hmm. And I don't want them to read just Two Solitudes by Hugh MacLennan, although I think it's an important book. There are hundreds of other books that have been published particularly over the last 30 years, mm-hmm. that reflect a very different Canada, one that is the multicultural society that we started to try to do in the 1970s. But we just, you know, you go into a bookstore and it doesn't matter what the bookstore is, and I'm gonna say there are a handful of bookstores in the country where this isn't true. A different book list is one of them. Mm-hmm. A different book list, you walk in the store and you will not see books that you see everywhere else.
Exactly.
You will see books that matter to you, and you'll have an intelligent staff that's engaged and they'll want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And that's true for a lot of independent bookstores. But the larger chain, Indigo, you go in, and frankly, you could be in Halifax, in Vancouver, in Winnipeg, or in Toronto, and what's going to be on the front tables is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be 95% American or British authored books and published books.
Yeah.
And if that's, and you know, the chain is 50% of the market.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what they're doing, everybody else does the same. And, you know, we don't have the book review journals anymore that we used to have. We used to have Books in Canada. We had more, other than CBC, places like CIUT, very few places are covering books.
Yeah.
And books matter because it's the conversation between the author and the reader.
Yeah.
And that's a very personal, intimate conversation, and it can change the way we think.
Oh, absolutely. I have to say, I read a rather peculiar, semi-pessimistic piece in Atlantic. Maybe you saw it, but it's talking, and it titled is The End of Reading is Here. And using Trump as the, of course, nobody can write anything without mentioning him, that he's illustrates this, what they call post-literate, where they're oral, but they can't write and they can't read. But it's I would say it's an overly pessimistic thesis.
I agree.
because they are pointing out, you know, we do have to, if Canada wants to protect itself, it needs to be a reading country.
It needs to be very much a reading country.
And we do have a reputation for it as compared to our southern brethren.
Whose entire culture was shaped and developed with a nationalist goal. They really did set out to make literary heroes that could bind them all together, and everybody in the United States and in Canada until even now read To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Or any one of a dozen books. And it is, those do serve to unite people. Everybody has a common touchstone. And they can say, you know,
Naked in the Dead.
Naked in the Dead.
Yeah.
A later edition. Well, actually, it's about the same time as in To Kill a Mockingbird, isn't it? But we don't do that in Canada. We haven't done that. We've used American books, and we've used British books. And you can still graduate high school without having read anything Canadian, which is appalling.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you find yourself in a position that you have to defend your country, one of the things you have to ask yourself about when you're saying Canada strong is, who are we?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer comes back, we're the people who draw the water and hew the wood, and not much more, that's hardly worth defending.
We're successful. We have an American baseball team.
Yeah, exactly.
We are now in the big leagues.
We're now in the big leagues, right.
We're speaking to Mark Cote, president and publisher of Cormorant Books, a wonderful publishing house. By the way, congratulations. You have a book by Canada's, it's been argued on at CIUT on the show where we feature theater and movies, Lynn Slotkin said that this new novel by Judith Thompson, In Crow's Field.
Yes.
This is publishing an event. You have our best playwright, arguably.
Arguably, our greatest living playwright.
After Trombley, I guess we have to say, since we've been talking about.
Well, Michel would say he's not a Canadian playwright.
Exactly. He's a Quebec.
He's a Quebecois playwright, yeah.
And by the way, if you want to understand the Quebecois, just read him.
Read him. Yeah, read the novels, read the plays.
He's more readable than René Lévesque, but they seem to have the same spirit. If you want to understand René Lévesque,
I would say Michel had a better sense of humor. Has a better sense of humor.
Yeah. So, but in Crow's Field, this is Lynn Slotkin was saying, and Lynn is a tough reviewer. I recommend people listen to her Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. But she said it really set her heart beating, like she was frightened in reading it. So that's a powerful book.
Well,
and that's a first effort at a novel.
That's a first effort at a novel. There's a funny story. When I first moved to Toronto, my great hope was to be the next great Canadian playwright. And when I moved here, Judith was just coming into her reign as the queen of Canadian drama. She'd kill me for saying that. But she really was in the ascendancy. Tarragon was producing her plays. She was getting rave reviews and awards were coming her way. All well earned. I remember seeing the first play of hers, and being struck by the distinct, authentic voice that I had never seen on the stage before, talking about things that needed to be talked about with characters who have stayed in my imagination and my memory ever since. She's a fine playwright and a powerful one, and oh gosh, about 20 years ago, Cormorant Books used to share offices with Playwrights Canada Press, and Judith would come in on occasion to talk with the people who were publishing her plays, Playwrights Canada Press. And one day she came in, and she and I were chatting, and I said to her, "When are you ever going to grow up and write a novel like adult writers do?"
Ooh.
And she laughed. And
I'm glad she laughed.
Oh, yeah. No. It wasn't meant in any way other than joking. And she laughed and she said, "Are you serious? If I ever finished a novel, would you look at it?" And I said, "Damn right I would." And then during the pandemic, I got a phone call. "Mark, it's Judith. Do you remember saying this to me?" "Yes." "Were you serious?" "Yes." "Would you still be serious?" "Yes." "Would you like to look at a manuscript?" And that is the band that
wonderful
became In Crow's Field.
But in my opinion, when something like this happens, it should be somebody ought to do a little feature story, in a major press, because it is, if we want to use an American analogy, Arthur Miller has written a novel. We'd all want to see that.
Yes, exactly.
Because we know he's a great writer, but that's a step. It's in another
piece
of territory.
That's right. And she made the transition beautifully, as Lynn pointed out. It's a very difficult novel. There's nothing easy about it, but there's nothing easy about her theater. But it is a necessary book. And one of our staff at Cormorant calls it a gut punch to rape culture.
There you go.
And that's what the novel truly is.
Based on what I was hearing, this, again, it seems this is where we have this sort of little cultural problem. Our media really don't seem, they're rather like our federal government. They don't always absorb or notice when something of this significance happens. It doesn't sit on their desk. You would think almost every department would say, "Hey, did you notice that she's written this novel?"
It was a novel. You'd think, if we go back 12 years or 15 years, when the Globe and Mail had a pullout section for books, there would have been an article for
That's
sure.
Where everybody goes.
And a review.
Yeah, everybody went.
Now
the went.
Went, yeah. And now the Globe and Mail has at best a page. Yeah. And the Toronto Star does a passable job, but it's not what it used to be. And
We're culturally, a welterweight or something. Again, I just quote Slotkin. She says this is a problem with the theater. They're not putting money into theater reviews, so people aren't seeing regular reviews where they look forward to knowing what this
what's coming up
this and quality what, reviewer is telling them they better go look at or not look at.
Exactly.
Speaking to Mark Cote, he's the president and publisher of Cormorant Books, and the thesis about tax credit. You have you cite someone, Richard Strasberg?
Richard Strasberg,
pardon me. And he wrote a piece called Lament for a Literature, bringing echoes of George Grant's Lament for a Nation. But he points out that our federal government does care about one portion of culture. They do have tax credit for television and
film and television
and
production.
Video.
Yes.
And he says, so why not for literature or books? Can you talk about that?
I can.
I bet you can.
Part of the reason is the publishing industry itself has not lobbied for tax credits.
Why?
Search me.
Aren't you the president? Do you guys elect a president? Perhaps you should have a political turmoil yourself.
I've been involved in Canadian publishing for 37 years now. And during that time, I've worked for the Association of Canadian Publishers Literary Press Group, as well as the Canada Council and the Ontario Arts Council. And it was sort of like everybody had blinkers on. We got funding from granting programs that had closed pots, that had subjective assessments. We had to fill out grant forms.
Closed pots, fixed pots.
Fixed pots.
Talk about that. What is that?
In a fixed pot, the government sets aside in a publishing program, let's say $10 million for all the publishers in the country. So if one publisher does very well and their grant goes up, that means other publishers have to have their grants go down in order for a publisher to go up. It creates a system of winners and losers that really, we can let the market make that decision. That determination can be made by people who are buying books. But I don't think it's right that the government should be making that decision. Mm. And it wasn't a conscious decision. It's just a result of the program design. And over the years, we've watched how Canadian publishers, if they really do succeed, they're also not limited to succeed wildly because they're still succeeding within the closed pot system. Hmm. So in a tax credit, it's not a closed amount. It's an open amount. And the good thing about a tax credit is it's based on your financial statements. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of filling in grant forms and explaining why you chose to use predominantly blue on the cover of your books this year, which is literally the kind of questions you get asked. Mm-hmm. And instead, it's straightforward industrial funding. These are your expenses. These are valid expenses. The government says, fine, we will reimburse you 30, 40, 50%, depending on a variety of criteria. And the good thing about that is it's 100% predictable. And in a perfect universe, publishers in Ontario would be able to fill out tax credits for Ontario, tax credits for the federal government, and no other publishing programs.
As I understand it, the way the fixed pot system, you spend a lot of time making applications. And which is a skill in itself. There are people who are known that they know how to finagle money out of somebody, and they may not. It may not be anything behind it. They just know how to ask for money.
I would say there's always something behind it, particularly in publishing. I would say there's nobody doing smoke and mirrors in publishing.
Yeah.
But there are, however, people who write better grant applications.
Who are better at it than others.
Yeah.
And that would be eliminated. You would actually have your personnel would be involved with publishing, distribution, and promotion.
Exactly. We would be doing books rather than
and filling forms.
And it is, in our case, it is one full-time position almost.
Yeah, and by the way, on the other side of the ledger, as you point out, the other aspect is the subjectivity of those looking at what you're filling out.
Right.
And you don't know what this who this person is exactly. And It just tangles you up and wastes time.
It does, because the jury system, and there's nothing bad, evil about it or anything like that. It was meant for good. The problem is you're mostly writing your grant application to last year's jury comments, not this year's jury comments. And, you know, the juries are made up of people who come with varying degrees of ideas about how publishing should look. And I say this, I've been on many, many juries.
You're talking about book juries?
Book juries.
Yes.
Not book prizes. This is for book publishers. You can be in a room with somebody who will say, oh, I'm going to give publisher X 7 out of 10 points for their book distribution because they use such and such a book distributor. Okay, fine. And then 20 minutes later, they're giving a different publisher 4 points for using the same book distributor. And this happened once where I was a juror. And the officer responsible didn't catch that these numbers were out of sync. And it's like, hello, it's the same book distributor. They get the same points. And that's where it gets a little bit squiffy.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, with a book publishing tax credit, there's no squiffiness.
Yeah.
You meet the requirements, you don't. That's it.
Yeah. And what you're looking at, you have issues of distribution. You have translation. You remarked on this that currently, they regard if you translate a book, I guess Trombley would be a good example, that it is considered double dipping if it's in.
Okay.
How could that be?
If for the federal program, translations are okay, as long as they are in English, translated by a Canadian translator, and the work is originally by a Canadian.
Hmm.
For Quebec publishers, the book must be translated by a Quebec translator, but it can be authored by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So they get 50% funding for publishing Stephen King.
Yeah.
Which is rather nice to be subsidized for publishing somebody that sells so very well.
He does very well.
But in Ontario, it's in Ontario where our tax credit program has a lot of wrinkles to it that reflect a very narrow mindset. One of them is they don't like funding translations. And it's like, come on, guys. You don't want a united Canada?
Yeah.
And I've argued with this with several people in the ministry over the years. And I got very close at one point to getting them to change their mind. And then at the last minute, Dalton McGuinty said no. Yeah. And apparently it was the premier's decision because the minister wanted it.
You know, it is such a skill, important, vital one. I mean, it's the the guarantee of quality and you would think that would be a simple thing for them to understand, but these are just, I guess, the foibles faced by publishers.
One of many.
Now we've spoken to you previously on the show about this phenomenon, but you point out that in France, in Paris, and in Quebec. This is a matter that their governments are focused on, and they're not kidding. If they seem to understand this thing of power, soft power, and how important it is. I mean, actually, I think of an analogy. In the 60s, Jean-Paul Sartre got in trouble with the French government because he was supporting the Algerians.
Yeah.
And they went to De Gaulle and they said, well, here's the information. We have to arrest this guy because he's obviously working with these people. And De Gaulle said, no, Sartre is also France.
That's right, yeah.
I'd like somebody, I can take back to Farley Mowat. Somebody should have said, Farley Mowat is also Canada.
Canada, yes.
You know, and this, so the idea, no, we're going to protect culture because that's who we are. Talk about that. I mean, when my mind, when I focus on it, that's what I think we should be doing is what they do in Quebec and
Paris.
In France, where bookstores get tax credits. Promotion, whole thing. And I'll leave it to you.
In Paris, in France, books cannot be discounted. It's the law. There's a price. That's it. So Amazon cannot discount books and eat into the market in France. Hmm. There are many bookstores in France. In Paris, the bookstores are, if you own a building that has a bookstore in it, your property taxes are reduced, and because they want to encourage people having bookstores in different neighborhoods. And so that gives people a solid, you know, lower rents, make easier to run a bookstore. And in Quebec, they decided, oh gosh, at this point, it's a good almost 30 years ago, I think. No, probably more. It's probably closer to 40 years ago. They decided that they wanted books published in Quebec to be available for the Quebec market. Mm-hmm. And so bookstores were required to have a minimum of, I think it was 400 linear feet of Quebec published books on display.
And they specified, you're going
to
do this.
You have to do, well, it wasn't a have to, it was an accreditation program.
If you want accredited.
And if you wanted to be accredited, this is what you had to do.
And anarchists do not have to do this.
No, anarchists don't.
They are perfectly free to do what they want.
But schools and institutions and libraries had to buy their books from bookstores. They couldn't buy them from wholesalers, whereas here in Canada, until relatively recently, many of our books were bought from American wholesalers.
And so, by the way, that is true and still true.
It's much less true today than it was 30 years ago. Yeah. But the bookstores in Canada don't have any regulations, and we don't have, so the booksellers have no sort of mandate to try and become accredited, and so they aren't required to have a linear footage. Some people would say that's the way it should be. That's fair market. But, you know, a company like Cormorant Books, we produce really good books. We produce brilliant writers. Yeah. And, you know, the idea of if we could get the tiniest real estate in a store so that our books could be face out, it would help. Yeah. And many bookstores, despite the fact that we do get a lot of good support, the best they can do is take our books and put two or three on the shelf and they're spined out. Yes. And, you know, we work with bookstores like a different book list, and we have book events with them. We do book launches with them. But, you know, at the end of the day, are they going to put more books by Toni Morrison on the shelf or books by Zillah Jones? Mm-hmm. And we know the answer to that because it's what sells. But if we were to put more books by Zillah Jones on the shelf and the booksellers were to say, you should really read this if you ever want to know about what
the
happened
staff,
in Grenada.
The staff suggestions staff are staff favorites.
Exactly. It makes a huge difference. And then what they'll find is over time, people will read these books. They'll recommend them to their friends. And their friends will buy them. It's like that old shampoo commercial. And I told two friends and they told two friends. And we can build our own culture this way. Yeah. And instead, we don't. Yeah. And we sort of sit back and think, well, Americans just write better books. But that isn't the case, and that wasn't the case.
Yeah. We're speaking to Marc Côté, president and publisher of Cormorant Books. And we're going to take a break for This Land Is Your Land, and we'll come back.
This land is your land, this land is my land. From Bonavista to the Vancouver Island, from the Arctic Circle to the Great Lake waters, this land was made for you and me.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley.
This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land. From Bonavista to the Vancouver Island, from the Arctic Circle to the Great Lake water, this land was made for you and me.
When the sun came shining and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling,
And we're back. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're speaking to Mark Cote, president and publisher of Cormorant Books, a very important publishing house. They do develop and discover writers, by the way. If you're a writer and want to be discovered, start at Cormorant. Once again, Mark, when I read your essay, it's Quill and Quire.
Yep.
Did I get that right? And the you arguing that the government has not been unfriendly. They always start off friendly. You actually have quite a list. From the 60s, they said, this is important.
Oh, yes.
And then you said, the 70s, this is very important. And then 80s and 90s, and even Mulroney. He took a real interest.
Two of the best things that ever came out for publishing were under Brian Mulroney's government. As he's busy negotiating the free trade agreement with the United States, Marcel Massé, his minister of culture, created the Meech Lake Accord. The Bay Como policy. The Bay Como policy required that whenever a company operating in Canada, but with foreign owners, whenever a transfer of ownership happened, that triggered a sale of the company in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So when, for example, when Rupert Murdoch, who owned most of William Collins and Sons and owned much of Harper and Row, when he combined the two of them, that was supposed to trigger the sale of Harper and Row in Canada and the sale of William Collins in Canada. And the government, that was law, and the government turned a blind eye. And they were allowed to set up.
They made Murdoch into a Canadian.
No.
Pardon me, he made us into Murdoch.
He was very smart. He found willing Canadian partners, and he loaned them this amount of money to buy Harper Collins, which was the new creation out of William Collins and Harper and Row. And Stan and Nancy Colbert bought 51% of HarperCollins with money that was loaned to them by Rupert Murdoch. So one could argue the beneficial ownership really stayed.
But then
where
did the headquarters go?
Oh, no, the headquarters were here.
I thought they moved. Okay.
They were here in Toronto. They did, but they moved their distribution. They took it out of FitzHenry and Whiteside, thereby almost destroying that venerable institution. And they set up HarperCollins distribution. And the interesting thing was, in this particular case, what Stan Colbert did was he made HarperCollins distribution 100% Canadian-owned. And when I challenged him on that many, many years ago, I said, yeah, but you borrowed the money for Rupert Murdoch. And he said, no, the bank loaned me the money. And I said, why would they loan you the money? And he said, because I have the contract for the sole distribution of HarperCollins in Canada. It's a winning deal.
Yeah.
And that is, in fact, the way a lot of Canadian publishers originally got rolling. People like McClellan and Stewart, companies like McClellan and Stewart, distributed Little Brown in Canada. They distributed the bigger companies, and Stoddart Publishing distributed Simon and Schuster.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that distribution, they were able to create strong East-West ties. They were to have a great distribution system, and it was profitable, and they could turn that money around and put it into their own in Canadian publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the government over the years, the various governments, most notably the Liberals, were very lax on the laws, and they let things slide. So in Ontario, black letter law, no book could be bought or sold in Canada unless it originated in a Canadian-owned warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it started under Mike Harris. This system started to very quietly be eroded, and no one enforced it. Mm-hmm. And then very quietly, I think it was in about 2020, they just took it off the books.
Yes. Well, is this associated with this peculiar geographic phenomenon of books being produced here, shipped to
Tennessee.
American West Coast, and then to Tennessee, if I understand it right,
Tennessee.
And then to here? Is that still happening?
They go from here to Tennessee and back. And the reason
we've eliminated the American West Coast.
I think we've eliminated the West Coast.
So we just go to Tennessee first. Yeah.
And the reason why distribution moved to places like Tennessee is because they are what are called right-to-work states, where the warehouses are heated and cooled for the benefit of the books, not the workers. And they don't have real minimum wage there.
They're free to work or not.
They're free to work or not, basically. You're right. So distribution is much less.
Right to work, they call it.
Yeah.
The right to work.
The right to work. And it's much less expensive to distribute your books out of Tennessee. So companies like Penguin Random House, HarperCollins, that's where their distribution is today.
Well, this is where the Canadian government should step in, right, and assist the publishers in the process and keep it in Canada.
I would agree. I wouldn't not even as a direct assistance, just say this is the law. If you're going to buy and sell books in Canada, they have to originate here.
Yeah. Well, in Quebec, for example, libraries have to buy books that are printed. Do I have it right?
No.
Tell me about that. What is the Quebec
system? The libraries have to buy books from accredited bookstores.
From accredited books.
So that's the way the system works. So what it does is, no matter what, local libraries in Quebec are going to buy from their local bookstores.
Hmm. And that, of course, makes for a stable and more long-term existence of the store.
Precisely.
I mean, you wrote about this actually in another article. You were talking about the demise of bookstores, and it was rather dramatic from 95, I think, to 215, something like that. Was it 5,000 stores disappeared?
Not quite 5,000. The official, the Canadian Booksellers Association claimed in 1995 that they had 2,400 bookstores as members. And today there are fewer than 500 bookstores, independent bookstores in the country.
500?
Fewer. So we've lost 80% of them.
Yeah, I was speaking to a Quebec publisher some time back, and they was mentioning that that there's hardly any in Alberta. It's just down to I don't know what they're doing. The whole country would like to know, but there's no protection, no security at all.
Well, I shouldn't speak to the Alberta situation because I'm not familiar with it the way I am, but you know, when I moved to Toronto, there we had Lykman's Books, we had Book City, we had Edwards Books and Art. We had independent bookstores.
You were one of the proprietors of the world's biggest bookstore.
I was.
Am I right?
I was one of the managers at the world's biggest bookstore
that
way back when.
Boy, was that an exciting idea. I mean, I know people who are proud of the fact that we said that.
Yes,
you know,
well,
we're like number one, right?
It was,
people like being number one.
It was called World's Biggest Bookstore. It wasn't actually the world's biggest bookstore. But when Jack Cole bought...
World's biggest bookstore in Canada.
It was certainly the world's biggest bookstore in Canada. Yes, yes, indeed. When Jack Cole bought an old bowling alley, that's what he did. He turned it into the bookstore. And it had virtually no storage. All the books that they had were on display from the minute they arrived in shipping and receiving and shipping, and they went right up onto the shelves. And that store, up until it was closed sometime relatively recently, there were long-term staff there who really knew their books. They knew
It was like going to a supermarket. People were moving around with their little carts.
They did.
Picking things up. A great phenomenon.
It was. It really was.
Again, the Quebec and France and others, they commit. What is this current... I mean, we just talked about Carney, and you're talking about a federal tax credit. To what department or what political interest do we go to correct this situation?
Well, in Ontario, we go to the Ministry of Culture, and federally, we go to Mark Miller, who is the minister for a list of things, including Canadian identity.
That's part of his job.
And that's part of his job.
Does it include elbows and Gordie Howe and that kind of stuff?
I imagine it does. Yeah. But, you know, where do you get your identity best from? Books. What do we know about the Greeks and the Romans? We know from their architecture. We know from their pottery. But we know most from their writings.
Yes.
And that is true for most civilizations. Yeah. What remains hundreds and thousands of years later are their books.
Yeah.
Their poems.
And that's a that prospect is is a very challenging. I'm referring back to Mark, or not to Mark, to Michel Tremblay. Somebody said, "We don't understand you." He said, "Well, we understand ourselves. We're talking to ourselves."
Yes, and that's.
And it'd be nice, actually, if the Americans looked across the board and said, "I don't understand. What are they talking about?"
Exactly. Instead of knowing what we're talking about,
they know because they're running.
Running the place. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if we had a conversation amongst ourselves,
yeah,
based on our books.
And refuse to translate it for them. Say, go and hire a translator, but we're not going to do this for you. That, by the way, several people have argued. Wouldn't it be better if we all were? You know, our greatest guarantee of security from the Americans is language. We ought to be working on our own language, our own priorities, and let others try to figure it out. Wouldn't be unhappy about their figuring it out, but let them do that.
Let them do it instead of us going to them.
I mean, we shouldn't have had to go to Edmund Wilson to O Canada. that should have been written on our side of the border. We're speaking to Marc Côté. Cormorant Books, and where do the authors fit in here? Are the authors joining this campaign? Surely they'd say, yeah, tax credit for my publishers so that he can put more time in the public, promoting my book. By the way, that's one thing I know from about the authors. Boy, do they want people to help them get to the place to talk to the crowd or to get it into a paper or magazine.
Absolutely. Book promotion is so important, proper marketing, and those require time and money, two things that we don't have a lot of. The authors, you'd have to speak to somebody from the Writers Union to ask them if they're as interested. I'm not sure that they've ever really come out on.
Is Robertson?
Ray Robertson?
Ray Robertson, pardon me. I always confused him with Sugar Ray Robertson. Ray Robertson is. I mean, is he in there? He got to be in there punching. By the way, he has a great book, The Right to be Wrong.
Yes.
And that's what we're doing today.
We're expressing our right to be wrong.
Right to be wrong. Even if we're mistaken, read the blasted books.
Exactly. I think Ray would probably, if he were at this table, he would agree with most of what I'm saying. But I think his fight is more intellectual. It's more along the lines of, we need to be able to talk to each other.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, my big thing is we need a culture that is strong, that is made up of people who are reading books and talking to each other about their books. We need to know who we are when we face the Americans across the table.
Yeah.
Instead of going there cap in hand, hoping that they won't take any more from us than they already have.
Yes.
And it's ridiculous. We are their market, but they do not want us to be our own market.
Yeah, we need, here we are with the Prime Minister saying defense, we're on our own, and all this stuff. Well, we need more conduct that reflects that.
Yes.
Because you can't say, we're going to take an independent stand, is what we should have done in the first place, et cetera. And then say, and I can't wait to go to Washington to talk about this.
or better, have them come here and talk to us.
Yes. And again, well, this thing about being featured at stores and making sure the shelf space, that should just be a given. And I've known authors, I bet you have, who go into the store, pick up their book and put it somewhere.
Oh, it's not just authors who do that. Publishers do it all the time.
Actually, it's simple retail. You say, well, look, if I'm in the back in that corner, no. And they just go and put it where it belongs.
Well, I'm going to use a case in point, if I might. The Bay Bloor Indigo took 14 copies of Judith Thompson's book that we discussed earlier,
yes,
in Crow's Field, and it's nicely positioned on the top shelf, 7 feet up, where no one can reach it. And you can barely see it. You'd think it would be on an end cap or on a table.
absolutely a table. And or in the window, it's here, with the words, it's here.
It's here, yes.
First novel by a great Canadian playwright. And that part of it, again, you see, if you wanted to, he had personnel freed up to do that, but had a tax credit, so you could say that job will be there all along. And they make the rounds.
That's right.
The salesman is a heroic figure, actually, but that takes the product and goes and says, "Hey, why aren't you talking about this?"
Well, they have many titles. There's no salesperson goes into a store representing just one company. Even if you're the sales rep for Penguin Random House, you're representing Penguin, Random, Knopf, Vintage, a long list of books. Mm-hmm. What we need is somebody who is involved in promotion, who can go into stores on behalf of a specific company, mm-hmm. and talk to the book managers, the store managers, and say, you know, hey, what about putting these books over here? What about doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, over the years, every time our books get prominently displayed, they sell.
Of course. You know, I don't know how we get in this thing where people sort of locked into the idea that the reader already knows what he wants, or she, or they. How would they know?
80% of book buyers are women.
Yeah, and they go in and they, it's true, they of course they have tastes and there are things they're looking for.
Yes.
And in every field, we have writers who could satisfy that interest. But that idea of unifying, I would like to see more initiative. I guess you said there is a writer's union. I know the poets have a large gathering. There are thousands of poets. But
there's the league.
They need to have advocates.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think we need some arguments, in my opinion. People should say, put it on the table. What kind of Canada do you want? What kind of, you know, what kind of books do you want? And there should be some cultural re-examination or self-criticism. Why have we been favoring this genre as opposed to this, you know?
Very true.
I think Farley Mowat was onto that to a large extent.
Oh, yes, he was.
He fought like a tiger.
He certainly did.
But Siberian tiger. It's almost extinct. Go on.
We have in our office a framed poster. And it's by a Toronto-based artist, Lucia Liu. And it is a map of Canada coming out of an old-fashioned typewriter. And that kind of summarizes what Cormorant Books is really all about.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to write our country into existence,
yeah.
Publish the country into existence.
Oh, that's you should feature that in your at your site. By the way, you do have a site. You have
a website?
A website weekly, but also you have a kind of a newsletter, right?
We send out a newsletter once a month. And we do posts on the website every couple of weeks and things like that.
Yeah. Well, you got something coming up on the 16th called the Drunken Whatever.
The Drunk Fiction Festival.
Now, that's a real reach. It's the Drunken what?
It's the Drunk Fiction Festival. And
Drunk Fiction.
Drunk Fiction. And it's a reading series that was founded by Emily Whedon, who is the author of two books, Autocrator and Hemo Sapiens. And she set up this reading series at this point about a couple of years ago at the Caledon Pub on College.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 16th, she's got writers and publishers coming in for I think we start at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and go till 10 o'clock at night. And
do you have to be inebriated to come in or to go out or
you don't have to
read?
You don't have to be inebriated, but you have to buy a ticket.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea to do. I mean,
we're going to find out how good it is.
Yes, we're going to. But we need, you know, we shouldn't have authors that have fistfights in the street, but we should have more noise coming from our authors and publishers, because we could maybe pose it as a crisis. We use this word lament, but it's actually a crisis.
It is a crisis.
We are living through a real threat now. And it's not just Trump, because you notice how quiet the Democrats are when he talks about taking us over. You don't hear the Democrats saying, that's impossible.
No,
they always just sit be quiet. Sure. So, like, if he takes it, they'll say, well, we didn't think it was a good idea, but now we've got it.
Well, they do have a place called Texas.
Yes. Yes.
And that wasn't originally Texas.
Yeah, no, it did belong to somebody else, actually. Yeah. Of course, they took Texas so that they could have more slaves.
Yes.
What a wonderful... we need alarm... you write about alarming matters in an unalarming way. I really appreciate that. That you make really eloquent arguments. Quill and Quire, I'm glad they're there, but wouldn't it be nice to publish your piece at like a full page in the Globe and Mail or some... Or can you, by the way, can you post it on your own site? It seems to me you should.
I can, and I have.
You have?
Yes,
it's there.
It's there.
Well, that's how smart I am. I just I take a fact and ask if it's there. We're speaking to, and have been speaking to, Mark Cote, president and publisher of Cormorant Books, a really wonderful publishing house. And we need tax credits, federal tax credits.
Ideally, yes.
For the
publishing industry.
So that they can concentrate on creating great books and distributing great books.
Yeah.
Distributing. And, of course, it's up to the rest of us to read these wonderful books. Ray Robertson, I'm really glad you raised his name. What a delight. We had him on the show. The guy is, you could tell him, he could write comedy.
Oh, he's very funny and very serious at the same time.
And a little dark, which is really adds to it. Well, Mark Cote, thanks again. It's always fun to have you.
Thank you, Phil.
This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And 33, 45, 78 is coming up.